with his eloquent and consistent passion and tefillah. This really is a homecoming for me, more than I knew. Now, maybe I feel a little weepy because I've been up since 1 o'clock this morning, your time, but I don't think so, really. I learned and treasure so much that I got in this shul back when we sat in those bucket seats. I felt like I was always in a 1967 Mustang when I sat. And, you know, from Rav Summers, I learned the importance of being a masmid, somebody who was very consistent in Torah. And from Rabbi Holland, I learned the importance of what they call in Yiddish, mitbrent, to have a fire about Torah. And from Rabbi Union, I learned about the integrity of Torah. And from so many other important rabbis, from Rav Sauer, I learned about the depth of Torah. Those are all elements of my personal foundation that I carry with me every single day. And all the people, I mean, when I was speaking to Scott Richards a few minutes ago when we saw each other in the street, the very first home I went to for Shabbos when I was in my process, and he didn't even know, I don't believe he even knew I was a candidate for Garris. I don't think you did. Maybe you did, huh? No. And the reception I got, as just a seeking Jew, this place, there is no place, I promise you, I've traveled a lot, there is no place on the planet like Anshei Emes. For its simplicity, for its uncomplicated, pure love of Torah, for its dedication and consistency. I could go on and on and on talking about the virtues of this congregation. And of course we know the Mesiras Nefesh that went into the founding of this place some 60 years ago. And it's still here, and it's still flourishing, and you're part of it. And I want to say that one other thing is that every place I go, you go, because you are part of me. You know, when I saw Zalman Magid and gave him a big hug, once in a while we run into each other in New York, and once in a while I run into some of you in New York, and it's such a tremendous experience. My dear beloved Yedid Nefesh, Ken Blaker, is here tonight, who was my roommate. When I read a book by down in Irvine, we were roommates for the, my whole process, and I read a little book by Rabbi Mordechai Ryan called The Magic of Shabbos. I know Rabbi Ryan today from Lakewood. He spent 3 years writing that book. I said, Rabbi Ryan, you wrote that book for me, because I read that little book. I had just moved to a very nice studio apartment in the Santa Ana, the Tustin part of Santa Ana, you know, the luxus part of Santa Ana. Nice place, babbling brook, you know, ugly cat lived on the porch. It was a nice place. I thought, this is cozy. And all my books, everything. And then I read that book and it destroyed me. So I had to move. I had to move. And Kenny was kind enough to take me in where we were there on 19 Grenache in Irvine. And I began walking to shul and he began teaching me. And my first experience with Gemara was right here with that man, with Gemara Brachos. And I was so dizzy from lack of punctuation in the Gemara. And, you know, today I sit each morning at Shor Yoshev Institute with Rabbi Avram Davis, who's my Rebbe. And we learn, he's the one who did the series of the Mitzudah, if you know the Mitzudah series, the interlinear. A wonderful, phenomenal person. And he sits there in the morning, he slaps my hand to make sure I'm awake and paying attention. He's just a wonderful, wonderful neshama. And then I get in my car and I go to my office at that humble little publishing company called Art Scroll Masorah Publications, where I'm today involved as a public relations director. So it's just been an amazing ride. Every week now I'm on the radio, AM 620 WSNR, with, you can hear my wife in the beginning saying, it's an hour of inspiration, information, motivation, and transformation on the Gabrielle Sanders Show. And there is nothing like this program, Sunday nights at midnight. I'm amazed at the people that listen. You know, once in a while I'll do a little giveaway contest, like giving away one of Rabbi Tversky's books. And the people that call in and what they say about the show, I know it's not me. It's just the package of the blending of elements that Hashem brought together in such a wonderful way So without focusing on the negative news of the day, my thrust, really the thrust of the program, is to nurture people's neshama, to feed their soul. I'm a big believer in soul food. And Judaism, Yiddishkeit, is where it's at. We've got the best soul food around, because it will change, literally, not only one's life, but one's world through a dynamic ripple effect, starting what we call the Dalet Amot, or Dalet Amos, and reaching on out. I'm bilingual now. I can speak with a tough or a soft. You know, sometimes it's really tough. I want. Thank you. I have to tell you, I have been so looking forward to this time, this little hour that I get with you right now. I must be crazy because I got on that plane this morning so early with so little sleep. And about 5.5 years ago, I married a wonderful woman from Far Rockaway who had 3 teenagers. And they're all, let's see, just Adina's 19 now, but the other two, Moshe's 21 and Penina's 23. And last night, right about now, Penina became a Kala. And such a mensch she got. What a guy. He's tall and he's handsome and he was born in Yerushalayim and he's been here for about 12 years and he's just a zisa neshama, as you would say. And I just am so excited, and all the excitement and the panic and everything else that kicks in, like, how's this going to happen? And of course, in our community, as you know, we do things fast. So it's an amazing thing. But I remember 5.5 years ago on Tu B'Av, the amazing July day, when the week had been so superheated, and that particular Wednesday, it was 76 degrees, and we had that wonderful wedding at 11 o'clock in the morning. Strange time for a wedding, but, you know, we wanted a quiet evening. So it was an amazing turnout of a wedding that the community put together for us in a glorious way. And I was just amazed. I never in my life expected to wake up one morning and go, I think I'll become an Orthodox Jew. That thought never happened. Let me tell you what I'd like to do with you in this limited time that we have. I'd like to deal with our time together in a way that I never have before. First of all, I want to start with just a short piece from this week's Parsha that relates to some counter-missionary thought, which I think is very interesting to bring out, because it's those in counter-missionary work know this, but the general people don't know this, and it's good to know because it's smack there in the Parsha in the first Aliyah. Secondly, I want to answer the question that is most commonly asked to me, which is, what do you like to eat? No. What was it that compelled you to become a Jew? Usually I don't have enough time. And my own autobiography, you can go to my website at gabrielsanders.com. It's all there from a lecture I did a couple years ago at a congregation in Rochester. There's other material there in the audio archives. You can find it all there. And then if we have time, we'll do a couple questions. I want to talk about Yad Lachem, though, and about this specific project that is of phenomenal importance for the Mesiras Nefesh involved in it and the danger involved in it, but the absolute necessity of it being done, and how you can be a point of, how you can be a participant in really, literally saving Jewish lives. So that's what I got to do in about 25 minutes. So here we go. Thank you. This week's Parsha, so interesting. I was just speaking to I was just speaking to a former missionary last night, and we came to this week's Parsha, and he said, I don't see anything relevant in this whatsoever. Where's the spirituality when we come to some part of, you know, the book of Exodus like this? And I took him through some other parts of just a couple of parshas before, etc. We went through some things. But in this week's parsha, we talk about this thing called machzit ha-shekel, the half shekel. And there's a phrase that comes up twice, that three simple words, that in Hebrew says, lechaper, why do you give this half shekel? Lechaper al nafshotechem, or lechaper al nafshosechem, okay? To atone for your souls. Now this is a very important passage, this phrase, why? Because it shows up in another passage which the missionaries use quite frequently when it comes to proving that JC is the Messiah. Now, the subject of atonement, or as they call it, at one-ment, how one gets becomes one with God, is crucial. And their statement will be, there can be no atonement without the shedding of blood. And they'll often quote a passage that they think is in the Hebrew Bible, but they're really quoting from the New Testament scriptures that says there's no remission except by shedding of blood. And then they'll take the person to Leviticus chapter 17, verse 11, which speaks about the blood being offered on the altar as an atonement. And that purpose there, the blood on the altar, was lechaper al nafshotechem, to make atonement for your souls. It says, for it is the blood that maketh atonement for the soul, in the King James Version of the Bible. Okay, their Bible. It's the blood that makes atonement. Lechaper al nafshotechem. Now, if you know that phrase, and you realize that that's the end result is atonement for the soul, and if you find that same consequence or result in other parts of the Jewish Bible, specifically in the Torah, then it means that that idea of blood being the exclusive means of forgiveness is not true. It's not true that blood is the only means by which atonement is achieved. We have a case, for example, coming up in Sefer Bamidbar, where Aaron runs out at Moshe's command with a censer filled with incense. It says, to make atonement for the people. And if you look for that phrase, either lechaper al ha'am, lechaper al nafshotechem, these other types of all related phrases, you will find in the aggregate that what the missionaries are saying is simply not just partial, but totally wrong. So that is just a little phrase that we find in this week's parsha that I thought was very interesting to note. And I wanted to bring that to your attention. Then in terms of answering the question, so what was it that convinced you to become a Jew? It was chomped. Chomped. You know, it's interesting because it's a good metaphor. It really is, because what is a chomped? A chomped is a blend, a unique blend of ordinary ingredients, cooked, slow cooked over time, that creates its own unique gastronomical result. Yeah? And my Jewish journey and my Jewish experience has definitely been a chalent. Let me mention to you five, and if I have time, maybe six ingredients from my spiritual chalent. And you can take it with you. It's not fattening, you know. It won't put you to sleep, you know. But it can nurture your soul, and I hope that'll be the case. The first thing that got my attention, and of course I'm omitting a huge amount of autobiography tonight by intention. If you want to know the timeline and the mountain peaks of crisis and realization and transcendental experiences and all that other stuff, it's best to either go to the website to listen to it there, or if you would like a copy of the disc or something, you're welcome to write to me. The Rob knows how to get in touch with me. I'd be more than happy to make sure that you can get that for your own enrichment. But I really, because I'm home and I'm with you, and I've spoken on this here before and also other parts of the neighborhood, I really wanted to do something a little bit different tonight in this context. Everything I'm saying begins with the letter C, because obviously Cholot begins with the letter C. Actually, it begins with ch, but that's okay, the letter ch. First of all, when I left the church world, I had already a basis of understanding some aspects of Judaism. It was now more two-dimensional, and I didn't have the added dimension of what the Torah component would do for me later on. But somewhere in my files, I have Ad HaYom HaZeh, to this day, I had sat at my desk at this big church in the valley, not too far from here, and I had written down reasons to consider Judaism. I was still a minister. I'm writing down this little notepad, and reasons to consider Judaism. And I wrote down, just at that time, four words. Eventually, over time, with experience and insight, that expanded to five and then 6 points of real clear understanding. The first thing I wrote down was the word community, which is called a number of things in Lashon Kodesh. We talk about Bnei Israel, we talk about Kehillah, we talk about Eidah, we talk about the Klal. Klal Yisrael is an amazing, amazing entity. It's organic, it's dynamic, it's alive. Sometimes, you know, we have this element that in the Jewish soul called Am Kshe Oref, the stiff-necked aspect of the Jew. But that which has often been called negative has many times been the element that has caused us to survive, that stubborn refusal to bend in the face of some tempting compromise. And our people, not just as individuals, but as whole communities, have said, no, we're standing for this truth. And when I see I remember the first time I really saw the Jewish community in operation was in Eretz Israel in 1982 during the Mivtza Shalom HaGalil, the Peace for Galilee operation. I was living in a secular HaShomer HaTzair kind of kibbutz. These people were so far from religion. I mean, their religion was the cotton fields, right? So the fish ponds and things like that. But when I was under fire, I saw the spark, the real Jewish spark come out. And it was an amazing thing to witness, this galvanized unity of this people that was far more than just a group of people in adversity coming together. There was something deeper, older, ancient that was coming out of them during that time. I was really keen to note that. So the first thing that got my attention was community. And today, when I look at our communities and I see the things that we do, I'll just give you one simple word. It's an acronym, right? Gemach. Gemilut Chesed. Gemilut Chesedim. The things that are available to help a person. Yeah, we're getting ready to make a wedding, right? And in Far Rockaway, we've got a gemach for flowers, and we got a gemach for chairs, and we got a gemach for tables, and we got a gemach for this and that and the other. I mean, it's unbelievable. The acts of charity and kindness, loving kindness, that have been set up many through the inspiration and the guidance of the Holy Chofetz Chaim, and all that we have in that respect that causes our community to say, here, I want to help. And many times that help comes in that highest form, that anonymous way. And then finally, that eighth level of the Rambam, when he lists the different types of charity, and you see the kind of amazing help that says, I'm not just going to give to this person that'll help him today. I'm going to give to this person in a way that'll help this person stand on his or her feet and be stabilized. I'm not going to give up on this person until he or she is walking and talking strong and tall. That's an amazing quality. That's part of that. You know, what does it say on Hashem's tefillin? What's written there? Mi ka'amcha Yisrael. Who is like your people, O Israel? Amazing. So community was there. But it's a community. The second letter C is commitment. We call it mesirut nefesh or mesirus nefesh. A person being moser nefesh. Someone who is willing to even give their life if necessary. And it's not just an individual who's willing to be engaged in self-sacrifice. Let me tell you one story that illustrates this at more of a macro level, going back about 245 years to the Ukraine, to the little village that everybody now knows where all the Breslov people go. I've been three of the last four Rosh Hashanahs to Uman. Uman. And it's an amazing experience to go there because you have Jews of every imaginable flavor and stripe and tall and wide and everything. You know, it's just amazing. But in that town of Uman, about 245 years ago, there was a terrible massacre. A group called the Haidamaks approached the Jews of Uman and said, "You must all convert or die." 25,000 Jews asked for, as a group, they asked for 3 days to think about it. And they decided as a community to say no. And they were brutally, brutally killed. Now, I don't know about you. Like I said, the world is no stranger to massacres. And the world is no stranger to individuals or a small group of martyrs. But this is no small group. And we have that repeated many times through Jewish history, where you see the extent of commitment. But it doesn't have to be at the martyr level to illustrate what I'm talking about. The fact that you do what you do to send your kids to the kinds of schools that you do at the prices that you have to pay, you're being moser nefesh for the next generation. And the work you have to take on, with sacrifices you have to make, you're being moser nefesh for the big picture. That's Jewish commitment. When I perceive those types of things, that showed me that this is not some kind of just limp sort of feel-good, liver-shiver kind of spirituality. This is a deep-seated, no matter how I feel, this is what I gotta do. Because Chazal tell us that a person is known b'rov ma'asav, a person is known by the preponderance of their deeds. That's what this is about. It's funny, I have my distance glasses on. I had a detached retina about October the 12th, and I'm having lots of fun trying to see, not see, let me see, what did I get? And I wrote this on the plane during a moment of turbulence. Oh, continuity, that's right. Need to keep this going. Jewish continuity is an amazing thing. Would you just take a moment, look around the room? Just see, just look, another Jew. That's what it is, man. Just, okay. Jews here, Jews there. Okay. You have just witnessed living, breathing miracles. Because I have to tell you, walking down the streets of LA, New York, Kiev, other places, I have never seen an ancient Etruscan or Roman or Egyptian or Babylonian or ancient Greek. But everywhere I walk, 13th Avenue, 18th Avenue in Brooklyn, you know, down Central Avenue in the Five Towns, and right here in Pico Robertson or over in La Brea or out in the valley in Valley Village, I see an ancient people that is alive and well. And the fact that we're here and alive and well, not just surviving today, thank God, but thriving, actually thriving, is because of the miracle of Jewish continuity. And we say it every single morning in the davening. There's a phrase, after the second Ashrei, then we say the words, Uva l'tzion goel, u'shavei feshe b'Yaakov, by the way, which is another whole missiological interesting thing to talk about. Rabbi Asher, my friend Asher Normand, who's formerly of this community now in the Valley, has written a phenomenal book on this subject. I'll just make a quick plug for him, called 26 Reasons Why Jews Don't Believe in JCPenney. But it's an excellent, excellent book, and he also deals with this particular passage. But right after that passage, we have this phrase that says, Ruchi Asher Alecha, my spirit which is upon you, Udvarai Asher Samti Beficha, and my words which I have put into your mouth, Lo Yumushu Mifi Zaracha, will not depart from the mouth of your seed, Umifi Zera Zaracha, and from the mouth of the seed of your seed, Amar Hashem Me'ata Ve'ad Olam, from now and forever. What is that spirit? Listen, it's interesting because there's both the spirit and the word. By the way, those are two things that the missionaries talk about all the time, the spirit of the word, the spirit of the word, the spirit of the word. Boy, do you look blurry. There we go. The spirit and the word. In our Torah, it tells us that the spirit Hashem put upon us where? At Har Sinai, would not depart from us. And his very words would be in our mouths and be transmitted mouth to ear, mouth to ear. And it talks about dvarai, words. That's both the written and the oral Torah that would be inside the mouth of the B'nai Israel. That would continue forever. Who are the Jews that are most vulnerable, who do not experience being a living, continuing link in the chain? Quite honestly, the Jews at risk are those who are furthest from Torah. The further a Jew goes from Torah, the further a Jew goes from being a continuing living part of Am Yisrael, Klal Yisrael. Just a simple, I see it all the time. I was part of the Reform movement for about 3 years before I went to see Rabbi Summers, Rabbi Union, Rabbi Holland, with great trepidation. I was very glad to hear that story tonight, by the way. Now I feel like I got the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help me, Rabbi Holland. And I'm so glad the story turned out to be positive. So, but this aspect of Jewish continuity, it's linked together with the spirit and the word. And that is such a miracle. And when I saw that, I went, wait a minute. You know, it's not the Jews who come to believe in JC. Those are the Jews on the way out. Those are the disconnected, disjointed, detached Jews. They're hungrily looking for spirituality, of course. But they're not connecting to the source. And the source goes all the way back to Sinai. Another letter C, and this is well known, is the contribution of Jews and Judaism to the betterment of the world. Again, after we read the Akedah in the morning, there are these beautiful words, which says, "Ve'idvarchu v'zarcha kol goyei ha'aretz ekev asher shamati b'koli." It says that all the nations of the world will bless themselves in you and your seed, Ekev Asher Shemata Bekuli, because of the fact, following the fact that you listen to my voice. We are the descendants of Abraham Avinu, and we have this inescapable, it's like hardwired into the DNA of the Jew, to affect the world. Latov l'ra, by the way. As we go down through Jewish history, we'll see cases of amazing Jews who've done amazing things to bring the world up. And we'll see amazing cases of amazing Jews who brought the world down. Because it's part of who and what we are. The definition of us in Sefer Shemot, as we read recently, was Mamlechet Kohanim Begoy Kadosh. We are a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. It's what we do. We're like the spiritual thermostat of the world. We didn't choose it. We were chosen for it. That's what we do. So it's best to do it in a way that's constructive. So you think about the fact that, and these are very famous stories I'm quoting now, you look at a list of Nobel Prize winners and see 1/5 of 1% of the world's population, and yet here's 25, 30, 40% of the people on the list are Jews. How could that possibly be? Hashem said, I'll make you the head, not the tail. Amazing. Here we are, a people without a common land, without a common history, without a common language, scattered through the nations for centuries, and yet there's this amazing organic persistency. Wow. That, ladies and gentlemen, is an amazing miracle. But it can be so common that, like the fact we can breathe and our heart beats every second or so, that we forget the delicate nature of it. The commandments, when I began to study Torah and I realized that a mitzvah was not a good deed project or something that a bar bat mitzvah should engage in by giving half their money to, I don't know, some nice cause, but that the commandment, the aseh velo ta'aseh, was the way, the means, the connective tissue between the spiritual world and the physical world. We read two parshas back in Parshas Truma, Va'asuli mikdash v'shachanti v'socham or v'tocham, that the spiritual world is accessed through the physical world through a process of elevation, and the elevation happens through the mitzvah. That's how it works. When I understood that, that changed my whole perspective on what I do when I'm all by myself. You know, do I make a bracha, not make a bracha? Who knows if I benched after I ate that bread? I know, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. Because there are many people, many, many people, who can be fair weather friends of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or who may live as what we call practical atheists. At a practical level of their life, they live as if there is no God. They may believe in God, they may have some religious practices or whatever, but a person who understands the power of a mitzvah understands that I am connected to the ultimate spiritual reality through these practices. They're like banks of a river that bring not confinement to my life, but contentment and containment to my life. That's the difference. That's what a Jew enjoys, by saying yes to the best and sometimes no to what appears to be good. And what's best doesn't always appear to be so good. And the last thing I wanted to mention, and this has come through more recent study as I've become part of a group with Rebbe Leib Kellerman and working through Mesillas Yesharim and the works of Rebbe Shlomo Volbe Zatzal. I heard a wonderful shiur, I think it's Rabbi Goldberg here in this community, who was a real Talmud of Rabbi Volbe's works, Alei Shor. I heard it over by Rabbi Bess probably 7 years ago or more than that, probably 9 years ago. And I thought to myself, I don't know who that is, Rabbi Volbe, but I've got to find out. In 2003, I happened to be in Jerusalem for 8 days of really tough work for a company I was helping out. And a friend of mine called me one day and said, would you like to meet Rebbe Volbe? I said, are you kidding? So I went to Rebbe Volbe's house. I had Moshe, our son, and Penina, who happened to be learning in Jerusalem at the time. We jumped in a cab. We went over to his humble little place in Givat Shaul, went upstairs in this cinder block building, and we sat with him for a few minutes, about 20 minutes, and he shared with me words that changed my life forever. And I asked Rebbe Volbe, amongst other questions, what do we most need today? And he looked at me through those thick glasses in his early 90s, and he said to me three words. See, a great sage doesn't have to say much in order to say a lot. And he said these words, Adam tzarich emune. A person needs faith. It's not just a mental assent, like, I believe George Bush is the president. Okay? I believe McDonald's is trafe. Right? It's far deeper than that. Emuna is something we gain through, in modern Hebrew we get this word emunim. They have this in the Israeli military. Emunim are the process of truth training exercises that condition the person to new reflexes to stimuli. Like if somebody came up and slapped me in the face, I'd go, ow! Okay? But try that with some soldier who's been really trained. The guy's going to be splat against the wall, right? That's what emunim do. And that's what emunah does. It gives us a new reflex action to a stimuli that would be painful or destructive to somebody else. We have a constructive approach to those things. Character is what's done. And I asked Reb Volbe, after he said those three words, I said, "For a Rav, ani chushev sheani mamin, ve'ani chushev sheani mamin ve'min ma shata omer, ech efshar lasig izeh, how is it possible to get this faith you're talking about?" And he picked up one of his svarim, not Aleshor, one of the other svarim, and he said, two words. Can you imagine what they were? It's close. He said, "Katuv kan." It's written here. And I have since given myself as much as I can to read his works and the Musar works of other great, great thinkers, and it's phenomenal. My Rebbe, Reb Davis, just did a translation recently of the Kav HaYashar, which is almost a forgotten book. It had the status of a Masilas Yesharim. It was nearly forgotten after World War II. And it's come back, and it's an amazing, amazing book on how to be a Jew. You know, it's not just the ideology, but it's the characterological component, the practical aspect of what does it mean to be a Yorei Shamayim. It's not just for a guy wearing a yarmulke, you know, Yorei Malchut. It's living in the reality that there is power above me to which I am subservient, and we realize in that wonderful thing we say in the morning, that phrase, V'chofet Yisraelu L'shtabelach. My name is Gavriel Aryeh ben Avraham Avinu. I chose the name Gavriel Aryeh because it epitomizes the essence of a Jew. Every one of you in this room is a Gavriel Aryeh, or a Gavriela Ariela. Because the Gavriel aspect is the malach, the angelic part of us. Just ask your mother, she'll tell you. And the Aryeh, the king of the beasts, the animalistic part of us, just ask your mother. We have this gift of a civil war within us that is the means by which we realize our potential. That is the beauty of Judaism. That's the power. Once a person understands that that's a good thing, not a bad thing, that that's the vehicle, the transport mechanism, you know, beam me up, Moshe Rabbeinu, that this is the how we become not just transported, but transformed, then it becomes exciting because everything that comes along changes our life for good and for God. So now, I want to say something about Yad Lachem as we conclude. First of all, I just want to hang out with you all night. I love the shul and everybody in it so much, I'm going to cry again. But I'm also pained, really pained, for what's happening to dear, sweet, wonderful, as you taught me in the Yiddish community, Yiddish Meidlach, Jewish young ladies in Eretz Israel who have been tricked, deceived, reeled in, held captive, Jewish girls in Arab villages. Let's take a typical scene. I'll give you a case study. Let's take a young lady we'll call Sarah. Came from a broken home, 15, 16. She's walking the streets of Tel Aviv. She meets a nice guy, handsome, named Moshe. Speaks a beautiful, elegant Hebrew. He buys her nice clothes, gifts, takes her for a ride in the car. He's a perfect gentleman, very kind, gracious. He says, "Would you like to come meet my family? They're a very wonderful family. We are a very close family." "Sure, great." And he takes her on a long ride down a dirt road into a funny-looking village. There's not a mezuzah on any house in that place. The doors and windows are painted blue. But she meets the family, and they give her fruits, and they dote upon her and care for her, and coo and fawn over her, and she says, "Oh, it's wonderful, these people really care for me, this is fantastic. Nobody did that way in my Hungarian family, that never happened," so. And she finds herself marrying Moshe, who's really Musa. And then there's the babies, And then there's the oppression and the beatings, the captivity, the confinement, the fear, and she wants to get out. But she can't get out because every move she makes is watched. Everybody's suspect of her, even though they think she's a Muslim. Yad Lachem has taken on cases just like this for Sara, at great expense and at great risk. And I'd like to ask you, as my family, my friends, if you would consider, I know you have many commitments this year, but if you would consider helping at least one girl get out. Yad Lachim has the mechanism and the people. I'll give you one case in point. A young lady, Jewish lady, whose father was a Palestinian, she speaks perfect Arabic. Looks the part, walks the walk, talks the talk, got it all together. She can get in and find such girls, make the initial contact, start the setup. And I tell you, the process by which they do this extraction would read like a spy novel. And yet there's one success story after another. And this is definitely an illustration of what's talked about in Masechta Sanhedrin, that a person who saves one Jewish life as if it saved the whole world, and they're doing it. It costs. It ain't cheap, as my old granny used to say from down in Georgia. But it's worth every shekel, every penny, every kopeck that can be mustered to put this together. I'm asking you, as my friends and my family, if you would consider as a congregation working to save at least one person. There's a brochure here Reb Shlomo has brought that talks about how Ahmed Ben Sara needs your help desperately. I ask you to read it. I ask you to consider it. I ask you to daven about it. I ask you to say, Hashem, I'm a person of limited means, but of unlimited ratzon. And ratzon leads to a tzinor, right? The willingness leads to a pipeline, a conduit, and through the conduit, you can do it. That's pretty good, right? That's all it takes, is a willingness. And from your willingness comes the means. You know, you really, literally, you create it by the desire. Desire is the fire to aspire. And sometimes you have to perspire. Okay? That's good too, isn't it? We have been gifted with the privilege to walk through the ages with the sages in the pages. That's good too. I got that from an old black preacher. But he must have been talking about Yiddishkeit. And our sages have told us to go with Mesiris Nefesh, that commitment I talked about, and rescue at whatever expense. And that's the practical application of everything I've talked about tonight must distill down to what difference did it make to you, and how did you make a difference from what we talked about? I have to tell you, quite honestly, I have never dealt with my journey, my odyssey, in this particular venue, but I felt compelled in my neshama that this was the direction I needed to go with you tonight. I want to thank you. You have to know from the bottom of my heart how much I love you and I appreciate you. And I said in the beginning, you are part of me everywhere I go. I want to cry again. Rob Summers, thank you for taking a chance on me. Kidding. Thanks for taking me in. All of you, thank you for taking me into your hearts and your homes and giving me the foundation I have today so I can be a Jewish man, Jewish husband, so I can get up in the morning even when I'm tired and daven and do all the things that are necessary, but to do it because, not because I have to, but because I get to, because it's life. Kiyem chayenu v'orich yameinu v'hem.
You want to thank Gabriel for this. I heard it many, many, many times. Never was moved like today.
Hey, again, we'd like to thank Dan Arthur and we'd like to thank Rabbi Kong. If for whatever reason you don't have any checks or anything now, whenever you see me, I will get it to them.
COD is the best.
Thank you very, very much.
You mentioned Rabbi Goldberg. Do you know his first name?
I don't remember.
Because my Rebbe's name is Goldberg, Moshe Goldberg.
I'm not sure.